Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Big Green Egg, the world's largest producer of ceramic charcoal grills, and also by Springer Mountain Farms, over 300 family farms raising birds in Georgia's Blue Ridge Mountains. Learn more at biggreenegg.com and springermountainfarms.com.
Welcome to the Heritage Radio Network. We are at the Charleston Wine and Food Festival. This is day two of our live broadcast at the Culinary Village. We have an incredible panel of guests today. I'll get to that in a second, but first we want to thank our sponsors, Springer Mountain Farms and Big Green Egg. So today we're live at the Culinary Village, and we have a panel of distinguished guests that don't need any introduction, but I'll do a little short introduction anyway. Daniel Ballude is celebrated as one of America's leading culinary authorities. He's a multi-award-winning chef, restaurateur, author, mentor, and philanthropist. Adam Sachs is editor-in-chief of Savour magazine. And we have Gail Simmons, a trained culinary expert, a food writer, author, and you all know Gail from as a judge on The Top Chef, which there's a story about Charleston that we'll get to and all that.
There are many.
Yes.
I like to know that one.
So welcome, everybody, and thank you for taking time out of what I know is a busy schedule.
Thank you.
What I want to start with, Daniel, and I'll start with you, is there is a reason you're down here, reason you're down at the Charleston Food Festival. There's a whole schedule of activities going on, and I want you to tell me about, you know, what's going on. And don't be so humble.
Yes. The first reason was to be on your show here this morning. So
that's right. That's right.
Heritage Radio.
My man.
I've been to Charleston quite many times. I think I've come for the festival. I've come for vacation. And this time I was invited. And basically they say, you'll do nothing. Just be yourself, and we will cook for you. And I'm very blessed. Then Mickey Bask, a longtime friend who is running the Charleston Place restaurant and food and beverage there, I've organized with my mentee.
Which is
my protégés.
Your descendants.
My descendant, such as Gail also, who had... We had the privilege to work together, but also Andrew Carmelini, Gavin Kaysen, Jean-François Bruel, the chef at Daniel.
Michael Anthony.
And they brought also a surprise for me, a friend, a chef, somebody I admire, I worship, and it was my best friend from Montreal, Normand Laprise, from Tokyo as well, to cook the dinner tonight. And the dessert will be done by Remy Funfrock, who is a chef nearby here and a pastry chef, and who has also worked with us a long time. So basically, it's a reunion.
So it's officially called the Daniel Ballude Legacy Dinner. And you are the legacy, and your descendants are there. And yesterday there was a talk. Gail, you were involved in that. It was Descendants of Daniel. It was Impact of an Icon. And it talked about the effect Daniel has had in the business and to the people. Talk about that yesterday.
I had the privilege of working for Daniel for 3 years, a few years ago, 12 years ago, went by in the blink of an eye. But I think that the most extraordinary thing about working for Daniel, I mean, sure, there's the food and the sense of hospitality and the sense of generosity. But when you work for Daniel, you become a member of a family that has such extraordinary far reach in this country and beyond. He has mentored dozens, if not hundreds, of young chefs who've gone on. We're just getting some beer here, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank
some
you.
Some Bay Street beer garden.
Cheers, yes.
Danielle is making me drink beer.
Oh, great. Excellent. Tradesman Brewery just handed us beautiful beer.
Small.
Bay Street Beer Garden.
Small, but beautiful.
So Danielle really has been a mentor and has fostered and let that drop. Holding too many things now. Thank you, Adam. Has just mentored and fostered so many great chefs in this country. His reach is so broad and so strong, and it's extraordinary as someone who worked for him for so long to take a moment with just a few of the great chefs in America who all worked for him and to tell stories about what it was like to work.
You are an outlier
him.
In a way, because you weren't exactly a chef.
I was not at all, ever.
Danielle,
not exactly.
You're one of the, one of the few non-chef people here.
Right.
You did.
She was the first one to roll the sleeve and help the chef.
I did, you know, I chased them all around. My job for Danielle was...
Keep track of them.
Yes, was to keep track of them. I was the wrangler for 3 years. No, I worked under Danielle and his director of marketing, running events and public relations for Danielle's company. When it was only 3 to 5 restaurants, now it's 15. So the company has grown tremendously, but it was an extraordinary
and
3 years.
And in a lot of states.
Oh, yeah, all
countries.
Over the world, from Beijing to Singapore.
No, man. Well, I mean, you know, New York, of course, is my home base. And so we try to keep it as a family there, most important.
Right.
It is.
Right. Mm-hmm. Adam. You know food as well as anybody.
You
cover it. You've been awarded for right. You love to cook.
I have cooked lunch.
You probably almost burnt your house down twice.
I once made for a story. So it was not real life, but I once made lunch for Danielle, and there was a moment where one of my favorite moments in cooking for anyone. I looked over, and Danielle put his finger in the sauce and licked his finger. And I thought, okay, I've made
did he,
it.
Did he go back?
Seal of approval.
Because if he went back and it's okay, that's when he's the real deal. Yeah. I would let him do that.
I took a spoon after and ate a whole spoonful.
So, Adam, talk about Danielle and his influences in food and on people. I mean, really, the reason he's here is because of the descendants and disciples, and that's a testimony.
But I feel old when you talk about me and what I've
done. He's alive. He's here. He's here.
But I mean that in a good way. You know, we're not honoring you. We're talking about you.
I think
the thing about Danielle that is remarkable is that at the same time that he has this influence, he has these, as you say, descendants, he's more... sort of with it and alive than anyone half his age. He's doing this stuff. Like, you never see Danielle looking tired. You never see Danielle going home
he's
early.
He's like Benjamin Button.
It's true.
He's getting more attractive and younger.
It's true.
It was a movie about a boy who aged backwards, started old and got younger and younger and younger.
So... you would know
played
that.
Played by Brad Pitt. You're going to
okay,
be fine.
Cool.
You would know that if you were like me and you followed Danielle on Instagram or Facebook. What is your Instagram handle is at Daniel Boulud, right?
Daniel Boulud, yeah.
So one day he's trout fishing in Pennsylvania. Another day he's in Lyon. Yeah. And then the next day, you know, he's here.
And I'm only putting 5% of my life in it. Because if I start to put 100, you're going to really start to worry.
We all would say when we worked for Danielle that it takes 15 of one of us to equal one of him. I mean, the energy is amazing. Well, and when I was talking to all of the chefs who were on the panel yesterday beforehand, doing a little research to get, you know, all of their dirty gossip, which there's absolutely none, by the way, they all resoundingly said that the hardest thing about working with Danielle is keeping up with him because the man never stops.
So
he's like a vampire.
The common thread was his energy, you know, and you got a bunch of young guys.
Yeah, but also I was saying yesterday, you know, once you build a team, then you try to really find complicity among each other and try to pull everything out of each other so you can really succeed as a team. As Gail was mentioning, you know, she was the wrangler because we
like
were busy
kittens.
In many directions and doing many things and always trying to stay focus with the motivation of excellence and, right.
But I
and
think
service.
When you,
and
when you talk about the influence of Daniel, it's obviously the restaurants, obviously the people he's mentored, but it's also this sort of relentless hospitality, this like extreme graciousness that is always there. Wherever you are,
that's a signature.
Wherever
and
you
is
are,
consistent.
You feel happy to be there.
Right.
You set an example for that. So I think even there's a lot of influence that you have on people. Chefs who haven't worked for you, but who
not
are
only
sort
that,
of
but you know,
see the,
I think the French got plenty of bad rep about being arrogant and unspitable.
No, what
I mean, they were doing
are
that
you
business.
French? You're a New Yorker.
You're many of
who's
the French,
French
were doing.
I thought he was Austrian.
They were doing the business for themselves. They love it, so they do it for themselves. They don't give a damn about the customer. They just do it for themselves. But then
he said it, not us.
I had to overcome this. And so, no, I think it was natural.
I don't think you had to overcome anything. I think that's who you were, and it just played out in the right way. Yeah. So
no, but I remember in the early 80s, in the early 80s, restaurant business, they were so arrogant. They were so, like, nasty sometimes.
Who particularly?
So wait.
Name some names.
Well, wait, let me ask you this question, because the way you had influences on younger up-and-coming chefs, there were a few guys that influenced you. Michel Girard,
yes.
Roger Verger, Georges Blanc. Now, were those,
and I learned hospitality
were those good
from
guys
them.
Like you, or
they, were,
they
good.
Were like, you know, hardcore, you know?
They were very good, and they were really the one who installed, I mean, who teach me about hospitality, about creativity, about, about really having, they were main of test, and where every one of their restaurants represented them very well. And I think I learned a lot from that, from the food to the service to the design to the relationship with the customer and relationship with the community and the farmers, the suppliers. It was just wonderful to learn from those chefs in France. And I think being in New York is not the easiest city to establish business and to pretend you live like a family, because everybody, you know, has a little bit of a stressful life sometimes living there. And compared to Michel Girard, where it's in the middle of the Southwest, and you had to drive 15 miles to get to any civilization. So, you know, you kind of stay as a little, as a tribe, a little bit together. And but that you really try to, you know, keep your tribe together. And then, of course, they go away. They do wonderful things like tonight. I mean, when you see Carmelini, who we worked 6 years together, and in the last 10 years, that built an amazing
empire.
Business. Absolutely, I think it's. I feel proud to have been associated with him in a portion of my life, and so is Gavin Kaysen and Mike Anthony. And
I think they all carry on what mm-hmm. you were taught and what you teach them. You know,
yeah.
Which is really why it is a legacy
and,
to you and all.
You know,
that.
They're smart enough to find out for themselves what's going to click.
So when was the point when you realized you had a successful restaurant and you imagined that you would open another one and another one? What drives you to do that? You just want to get your art in front of more people?
I don't know.
I know
masochism.
It's a good
thing.
Because it's a hard thing to oversee an empire and control the quality. Alfred Portelli is still in the same restaurant.
I know. And every time I see Alfred, he's happy. He's going. Yeah. Oh. I say, what are you doing today? Oh, I just came back from tennis and I might go for
carved
a little golf.
Table or something.
But what drives you? I mean, thank God everything
I don't know.
Is great and successful.
I was very happy with my first restaurant. And the motivation to... So Daniel was basically 5 years old. And Daniel would celebrate his 25th anniversary next year. And he was barely 5 years old. Then I already signed up for a new space, which was the old Le Cirque, to open... Right. To move Daniel and create Café Boulou. And I think this was the most disturbing year of my life, where I had to open two restaurants at the same time, 10 blocks away from each other, and going from 75 employees to 250. In the space of 5 months. I wouldn't like to do it today, but I was very happy to do it then. And I had no hesitation ever, no.
That was the time. You had the energy and the vision.
Yeah, and then we kept you know, every time I could save a little bit of money from my first business, it will help to open the next one. And you know, not trying to go crazy either, but neither also, you know, taking the money and run with it either.
Right.
It was about creating new business opportunity for teams to grow with me and become more responsible. And you know, it's young chef. You hire them at a young age. You work with them for 5-6 years, and then, you know, if you give them the bridge to cross, then they'll cross it with you. If you don't give them the bridge, they'll move on to cross their own bridge.
That's how it works. Mm-hmm. So now you have, you used to go to work to Danielle and worry about produce, supplies, personnel. Now you have a more global view of a, you know, much
don't
more restaurant.
Don't kid yourself that he's still worrying about
hands
every-
on.
I mean, the one thing I remember about him walking into the restaurant every morning when he already still had, you know, 4 books due and opening 5 more restaurants and launching a product line, and he would still come into Danielle every day and notice when a candle was slightly out of place or the floral arrangement hadn't arrived in the colors that he had asked for the
that's
season.
Why who
or the
he
white
is
asparagus delivery hadn't made it that morning. And that's, I think, what makes him so special, because he cares about the details
That's the way it works. Danielle, I want to take a little detour, because while I have Gail here, the Top Chef season 14 took place in Charleston.
I know, I missed that, but I went to Mexico for
the final. But he came to
the
finale in Mexico for the
finale. The finale was in final.
I really was upset to miss Charleston.
So, Gail, tell me a little about how everything came to an end. It came down to the two chefs. There was a Charleston chef in the mix along the way, too.
There were two Charleston chefs, Jamie Lynch and Emily Hahn, who are incredibly talented. They're here this weekend. I've seen them gallivanting around. We were so thrilled to be able to come to Charleston. We'd been trying to come to Charleston for several seasons, and for one reason or another, you know, it's a production... It's a big production these days, and so there's about 150 of us, and we need to be somewhere for over 2 months. And so the orchestration of getting everyone here took a little time, but we had some really great champions at the CVB at Explore Charleston, and some amazing people in the community, Terry Henning among them, who really fought to get us here. And we spent May and June here of this past year, and it was extraordinary. I had never been to Charleston before. And we
go back. Why was Charleston selected? Because it's a restaurant.
Right. Well, because it's a restaurant town.
Backdrop.
Because it's having this magical moment.
Right.
Because the chef community is strong, and the food is delicious, and the cultural history is fascinating, and it's beautiful, and it's just the right size. It's interesting because there are a lot of bigger cities in America with a lot less the restaurants here are such a voice right now, and they are the world is taking notice, and so there was so much to do. We could have been here another 3 months and not seen the end of it. So we had a blast. The chef community welcomed us and really made us comfortable. They went out of their way for us. We ate like kings.
Do you get to eat? Do you get to try a lot of restaurants?
Oh yeah, I have a very comfortable schedule on Top Chef. I have parlayed my way. Well, the days that I work are 14-16 hour days, but because I'm not on the quick fires and not in necessarily every single episode, I get every other day off.
Oh, nice.
So I can't speak for everyone else, but Tom and I have it pretty good. So we get to go out and eat a lot, and we're kind of here, but not. Everyone else is working really hard, but I'm okay. So we got to really explore the city, and we went out to the islands, and we took food adventures to Onondaga, and we really got to know Charleston, and it was a very special few months.
Daniel, what do you think of? There's definitely a style of cuisine here. They tag
very
it
much.
As low country cuisine, and I think Charleston grew because a lot of chefs came up and were committed to that. What do you think of this type of cuisine, the low country cuisine?
I mean, I love it, and I took my Christmas vacation 2 years ago
here,
and I was in Tennessee, and I drove down all the way to here and stopped to Asheville and stopped in other places, and then spent time here also, and being invited and I love the approach to the cuisine here, and also the indigenous ingredient they use. I think it's really, and there's a lot of creativity among the classic, where they don't really, they don't manipulate or transform the classic in a way that you don't recognize them, but there is a certain refinement in it. I mean, this morning we had biscuit and fried chicken and biscuit, and
you had a light breakfast.
Yeah. But I mean, I never had such light biscuit like this, and they were almost falling in your hand, crumbling.
Yeah.
So beautiful. And we were at La Farfalle, by the way, for breakfast, and we had a 10-course breakfast.
It was a very light start to the day.
It's funny, when you talk farm to table, everybody's farm to table is different. Here you have a lot of water, there's a lot of shrimp. They're famous
very
for their golden rice, so there's ingredients here that
corn,
are...
The corn also.
The corn and everything.
Absolutely,
and
there's some very indigenous corn here.
You really see it represented well.
I think there's a real culinary heritage here that people are very proud of. There's a history that is only now, I think, being recognized in the rest of the country. Gullah Geechee cuisine, for example, that is something that most of us, certainly in the north and west of the country, don't know that much about, but is being so celebrated here, and I think is teaching people so much, not just about the ingredients and the style of cooking, but about the history of the people who came to Charleston by boat and by land, and
history.
Finally is really being honored, and that's something I think that's very exciting that we should all celebrate.
The Charleston Wine and Food Festival has put Charleston on the map in even a bigger way. I think Travel and Leisure magazine voted it as one of the great cities with Florence.
Absolutely.
But do you see the festival getting bigger and bigger since you've been here, more sophisticated, more diverse?
I think it has to become stronger and stronger, but maybe not automatically bigger and bigger.
Better than bigger.
Well, yeah, stronger, better. I mean, it's already very strong and big, but I don't think the wish is not about, you know, tripling this business. I think the festival is so appreciated for how sort of it's almost 25,000 people coming over.
It has the right feel.
It's a lot of people, and yet you don't feel it, and it's over commercial, and there's people can take advantage of everything. So it's very cool.
Right. Adam, you're down here with Savor, and Savor's doing a bunch of things.
Yeah.
Some fun stuff. Let's just talk about
too
them
much
quickly.
Fun stuff.
I see Instagrams, you know, with contortionists and
yes, we're
all
mostly
kinds of things
yeah. contortionists.
I don't know. I missed that party.
We would only be involved if there are contortionists.
That's it.
And if I can get no more than 2 hours of sleep a night, so that's important. Cool. Yeah, I mean, I think Daniel's right. I think the scale's great here. You get so many chefs from out of town. You get so many people locally you want to meet, but everything is intimate enough that you really get to interact with the chefs, with the local producers. So the size feels very nice.
I was
to
at
us
a
here.
Dinner with you the other night, and they brought back an old famous Charleston chef, Robert Dixon.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. At the gym join, and
some
it was
singing,
a nice thing because he had
singing
his
and contortionist. Those were the
So that was
the gym joint. The contortionist.
Yeah,
and the singing is a great part of the festival. It's great.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to wrap up soon, but before I do I wouldn't want to leave out the part that Gail and you, Danielle, are very focused towards charities and philanthropy, and you put a lot of time and work towards that. And I want to talk about that. Danielle is the co-president of City Meals on Wheels, correct?
Yes.
He's probably one of the great chef mentors, not just for a Charleston dinner, but the Bocuse d'Or. Yeah. Talk to me a little about Bocuse.
USA.
Yeah, the book is not USA.
From
USA. The team.
What do you want from a guy from
USA.
Jersey? Bocuse.
Yes, absolutely.
Talk about Bocuse,
well,
because it's really been the U.S. team, and
absolutely.
Talk about City Meals on Wheels for a minute.
And so the Bocuse d'Or was this Olympic of competition, basically it's top chef on testosterone, where and it's every 2 years in Lyon, 24 countries competing, and the Americans were doing okay at best until with Thomas Keller, myself, and 40 of the best chefs in America, we created a culinary council to support and find good candidate for the team. And gradually, we got better. And 2 years ago, we did silver with Phil Tessier, and this year with Matt Peters, we did gold.
First year of gold, right?
Yeah.
How rewarding is that?
that was very rewarding because I think it was the accumulation of knowledge and the, you know, every other chef who went from every other chef who went to compete before in the year before, they sort of brought knowledge back and they suffered through it. They couldn't make the podium, but at least it was great insight for us to know how to win. And so that's
now. You have to defend.
No, but then we have a foundation, so that's a little side things we do. And Gavin Kaysen, who is here also, is he was the coach for many years. He was a competitor himself, and now he's going to become the president of the U.S. team. So that's very nice. Thomas Keller is stepping down after 10 years, which is good. He's not stepping out of it, but down. And then Gavin will become the president. And then we're doing mentor. And mentor, it matters more because it's about how, you know, as a young chef, I could not afford to go and do stage somewhere. And for a cook to do a stage, that means that he's not going to get any salary. He's going to have either his parents to help him or borrow money or save money. But as a cook, it's very difficult to save enough. And so we are offering grants. And we have offered so far to almost 100 chefs, young chefs, a grant to be able to take a three-month sabbatical and travel anywhere in the country and choose the chef you want to go and spend a month with or 3 months. And we take care of their expenses. We take care of their salary. We keep them, you know, we keep them covered while they can take a leave of absence.
It's a great
to their
program.
Job. And it's really fantastic. It's great motivation for them.
And you've been at City Harvest. City Meals on Wheels.
Yeah,
for many years.
Yeah, City Meal. I have the gala coming next weekend. Actually, yeah.
Danielle?
Yes, right. And Gail will be there.
I am. I'm gonna MC it.
Gail has been an amazing supporter of City Meal, and I've been blessed with many friends. So we have chef from LA.
It's a very
Lido. We have chef Grant Akatz from Chicago coming.
Alinea,
and many a chef from Europe. But we're gonna hope to raise. Almost $750,000, I think, for just a small dinner Sunday night.
Terrific.
It's very very nice. Casual.
Terrific.
And Sunday Gail, night. He's making burgers.
Yeah, right. Gail, there's be okay wine and burgers, right?
Yeah.
Gail, you're an active board member on a bunch of things, too. You spread your time around. Tell me a little about the important things that you're working on.
I think as someone working in the food industry, and I know the same rings true for Adam and certainly Danielle, that we are very privileged to eat the way we eat and to live the way we live in this country. And so I spend the majority of my time on hunger-related issues, not unlike City Meals. I'm on the board of City Harvest in New York, and I do a lot of work with Spoons Across America and a project out of Chicago called Common Threads. But as a woman in the restaurant industry, I think women in the restaurant industry often tackle slightly different challenges, and so I'm very active on the board of directors for an organization called Hot Bread Kitchen, which supports... It's a social enterprise that supports immigrant women in New York and in the tri-state who are working to become bread bakers and are in management track positions. We give them health care. We give them English as a second language, and we give them bread-making training, and we give them a year of training to be incredible bread makers and then place them in jobs. And these are women who come from all over the world, and we use their own recipes from their home countries as inspiration for what they cook that then we can bring to retail for them and support all their causes.
It's so amazing.
And it's an amazing organization.
I actually had one of my women's bakers. She was from...
She founded the organization.
From Morocco or Algeria. Mm-hmm. And she was making the MC bread we make. She taught us how to make it.
Yeah.
And we served it at Boulou Sud and kept
That's right.
It.
You, Danielle, was one of the first supporters of Hot Bread Kitchen because...
Lily, my partner,
well,
was involved
and that's right.
with it.
And Jessamine, the founder, mm-hmm. who had an MBA and realized what she wanted to do, learned that if she was going to start an organization about baking bread, she needed to bake bread herself. So she went to Danielle's boulanger, Mark Fiorentino, who was his boulanger for many, many years, and spent a year working under him, making bread at 3 o'clock in the morning to learn to bake bread so that she could teach the women.
That's great.
And, and they were his their first clients who got the bread from them as well. Yeah. So
that's great. Well, we,
so this
we,
is how far-reaching his mentorship is.
I forget those things. Yeah. How they stop.
We thank you guys for all your time and effort that you put towards that. And we're going to wrap the show up. I want to thank Daniel Ballud. I want to thank Gail Simmons. I want to thank Adam Sachs for stopping by the Heritage Radio Network TP at the Charleston Wine and Food Festival. And we hope to see you again soon. And well, congratulations and good luck on tonight.
Thank you. But
thank you.
Congratulations to you and the team at Heritage for keeping people well inspired and informed with food.
Thank you for those words. All right, we'll be back with another show. And thank you to Springer Mountain Farms and Big Green Egg as our sponsors.
This episode is brought to you by Big Green Egg, the world's largest producer of ceramic charcoal grills. In business since 1974, they've transformed ancient cooking vessels into modern-day masterpieces. Today, they sell 7 sizes of the egg, as well as hundreds of accessories designed to make your cooking fun, entertaining, and delicious. Often copied but never equaled, the Big Green Egg is the ultimate cooking experience. Learn more at biggreenegg.com. This episode is also brought to you by Springer Mountain Farms, over 300 family farmers raising birds in Georgia's Blue Ridge Mountains. Many of them are second and even third generation. They're committed to doing things the right way. Springer was one of the first poultry companies to forego the use of antibiotics, and they've embraced other humane practices too. In fact, they were the first poultry company to earn the American Humane Association Seal of Approval. Learn more at springermountainfarms.com.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.